TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Dismantling Corporations. This is the second of a four-part tribute to Richard Grossman, who Ralph Nader called the preeminent historian of corporations. Richard died of cancer on November 22, 2011. He was only 68. I see him as one of the lucid people who first described not just the history of corporations, but the now global challenge to democracy and personal and state sovereignty that they pose. In the preface to his 1993 pamphlet, Taking Care of Business, Richard wrote, "Corporations cause harm every day. Why do their harms go unchecked? How can they dictate what we produce, how we work, what we eat, drink, and breathe? How did a self-governing people let this come to pass? Corporations were not supposed to reign in the United States." End quote. Dave Henson was co-founder with Richard Grossman of the Project on Corporations, Law, and Democracy. He wrote, "I hear the direct and indirect influence of Richard Grossman every day in the Occupy movement. I'm sure he had quite a critique of everything Occupy, but I know he must have relished in the increasingly widespread conscious dissent he has helped instigate." End quote. For a sense of how early Richard Grossman formed his analysis, how long it took for his ideas to be accepted or even known, here's a speech he gave in Washington, D.C. at the 1996 teach-in organized by the International Forum on Globalization.
In the year 1407, the good sovereign king Henry IV of England chartered the Company of Merchant and Adventurers, the ancestor of the East India Company, granting it monopoly control over exports of certain manufactures. The empire started to expand, wealth began to flow into England. In 1553, the crown chartered the Russian Company, granting monopoly privilege over certain trade routes to Russia. The company also got special concessions from the Tsar. In 1553, the Africa Company was chartered, was given special privileges to pursue the slave trade. In 1557, the Spanish Company was chartered, given special privileges and monopolies to control the wine and olive oil trade with Spain and Portugal. In 1578, the Eastland Company was created, given sole privilege to carry on trade with Scandinavian countries. It was also granted additional authority to make laws, impose fines, and imprison people. In 1581, the Levant Company was created to trade with Turkey. In 1592, this company merged with the Turkey Company and the Venice Company, in which Queen Elizabeth was a shareholder, to form the East India Company. In 1605, the East India Company was given a charter in perpetuity and given exclusive rights to trade in specified areas of Europe, East and West Asia, North and West Africa. What was the purpose of these and other global corporations of those days, these chips off the old block of sovereignty? Well, in hindsight, we can be very clear that their mission was to buy cheap, to sell dear, to limit or prevent competition, to vacuum out resources, to display fierce violence and to perpetuate violence to people, species, and places, to destroy existing cultures and social relationships, to replace independence with dependence, to eradicate people's sense of their own histories, to get people to internalize the corporation's values, myths, and worldviews, to create a class of bureaucrats and civil servants to serve their needs, to define people as subjects, objects, property, invisible, or anything else they wanted to define them as, to control all dispute resolution, to raise armies and navies and wage war, to write laws, including laws and doctrines which legalize and institutionalize the corporation's destructive and dominating acts, to enforce laws, to impose punishments, including executions. In other words, to govern, and to govern dictatorially, but with guile. From these hundreds of years of experiences, can't we deduce the nature of the corporate fiction? These corporations didn't just create some excessive harms. They didn't just occasionally exploit. They didn't just drive bargains. They were, by definition, by their nature, oppressors. It's an old story, isn't it? The cults of the few tyrannizing the many. And the many, what about them? Who were they? They were the violated and the dehumanized, the oppressed, the people blocked from being and acting fully human, from participating in their own governance, from defining their own lives, their own work, their own values. Today, the majority of the people in the world are oppressed by the few, and the oppressive vehicle of choice is, guess what? The global corporation. So isn't it time that we started acting like oppressed people? Well, the question is, what kind of oppressed people? The conscious oppressed people or the unconscious oppressed people? Here are some characteristics of the unconscious oppressed people, which I've stolen from Paulo Freire. They believe that the oppressor is the model of humanity. They adopt the oppressor's values. They aspire to be like the most eminent and respectable of the oppressors. They are drawn by the irresistible attraction to the oppressor's way of life, thereby modeling their civic, educational, and other institutions after the oppressor's institutions. They accept the dominance and authority of the oppressors as just and appropriate or as inevitable. They concede to the oppressor basic legal and cultural authority to define investment, production, and work, and to define values and concepts such as progress, efficiency, productivity, sustainability, legal violence, justice, freedom, human rights, liberty, nature, security, property, prosperity, peace, public, private, and personhood. They allow, even encourage, oppressors to educate and entertain their children. They fear governing themselves. They fear to define their own societies. They do not know their own history. They think and talk and strategize in the language of the oppressors. They pursue their grievances only in the dens of the oppressors. They confuse freedom with the maintenance of the status quo. And what about the conscious oppressed? Well, there are people in the process of moving, of uncovering their own histories, especially by examining events and eras glorified or distorted by the oppressors. They're relearning their languages and their culture. They're realizing how naive they have been. They're coming to see their oppression as a distortion of being fully human. That to permit themselves to be treated as objects, as property, as subjects, as invisible, to permit one's community to be treated as a fiefdom, is nuts. Who are joining to help each other to stop regarding the oppressors as abstract forces, as created by God or Mother Nature, who are confronting their realities analytically, teaching themselves by investigations and intentional discussions and authentic action, not merely to curb the worst excesses of the oppressors, but to craft resistance, which is about taking power and legitimacy from the oppressors, and by assuming the authority to govern themselves, who see freedom not just as a gift or as an endowment, but as a process by which they can aspire to create institutions of self-governance, and that they can maintain these institutions by acting responsibly and accountably to one another, who are impatient and also patient. That's the kind of oppressed people that we need to be. And I think as a result of the efforts and struggles versus tyranny and for consciousness of people around the globe, across the centuries and centuries and in recent times, that that's the people who we are becoming. In Freire's words, we're moving toward the historical process as responsible subjects, not as objects, who can work with one another not to grovel for concessions, or fawn over the false generosity of the oppressors, but to transform our world. So what does this mean for us today? Well, we have some models that we can use as guides. The triumph of the majority of the people in South Africa, the triumph of the Indian people in India, our own American Revolution. But for each of these events and processes, it's important that we look to see what happened and what didn't happen, just to re-examine the history. Let's look at the American Revolution. Well, actually, take a look at the South African Revolution. I learned the last time the IFG people were together from our colleague in South Africa that in the new South African Constitution, corporations are written in as citizens. Now, the American Revolution, what was it? One of the things it was, it replaced a dictatorial oppressor with a very different idea, the idea of self-governance, and it sent the idea of the monarchy packing. And we transformed crown corporations, dictatorial crown corporations like the Massachusetts colony and the Virginia colony and the Carolina colony into constitutionalized states. What it was not self-governance and democracy for all. So that even though sovereignty passed from the king to the people by revolution, once again there was a minority cult tyrannizing the majority. Native people, African Americans, women, men without property, debtors, and the rest of the species and places. Given this great founding violence against humanity, it is logical that the institution of the tyrannizing minority would one day rule again. It didn't take long. Although the word corporation is not mentioned in the U.S. Constitution, although the minority who recognized themselves as people instituted mechanisms to define and limit the corporation with precision, to keep it from political rights and power, by the end of the 19th century, the corporation had waged a counter-revolution, had transformed the laws, and was on its way to becoming, to being, what corporations had been revealed as for the previous 300 years. With the wealth and power, they constitutionalized corporate rights and authority over property and over the decision-making of what counts. In other words, they became able to act as legal persons and created the fiction of the market, where investment, production, and work decision-making, the basic decision-making that shape our lives and our communities, were declared beyond the authority of the people. So that even when the excluded classes of people, African Americans, Native people, women, men without property, after a century of struggle had become people, had won their rights, the corporations and the culture were powerful enough, the corporate culture was powerful enough to transform all of us into consumers. I go through this because it's vital in our road to consciousness and in our engaging and authentic action to understand that what corporations are now doing around the world, they accomplished in the United States of America 100 years ago. And what they have been perfecting all through this century in this country is what they are seeking to do globally today. What else is GATT or NAFTA, the Multilateral Agreement on Investments, but the logical next step to constitutionalize the corporation everywhere, through guile to legalize the property rights of corporations over everything that really counts? Given this reality and given this history, we need to ask ourselves critically, what is the nature of our alleged democracy in this country today? Can we say that we have a democracy? Can we say that we the people are politically free, that we govern ourselves when corporate fictions not only wield power and authority under law, but they also have oppressed so many people into unconsciousness? When we gather to talk about our goals, how can we gather to teach each other to meet as political equals, as aspiring to nothing less than political freedom? To recognize today that today the giant corporation is illegitimate, that we must not concede to the corporation any authority, that we must understand how they have colonized our minds, lowered our aspirations, confused us about who we are and what we can be. The late 19th century populists refused to concede to the corporation authority over their lives. They refused to concede that the corporation, this artificial entity created by the people, would become the dominant institution of society. They understood that if the corporation has turned the law around and the culture around so that property rights are greater than human rights, there can be no such thing as self-governance. But that was the last social movement to be so conscious, to be so clear. The progressives, the New Deal, and ever since, our citizen movements essentially have conceded corporate power, basic power and privilege and authority to the corporation, to this form of property. Most citizen efforts have been to tinker with corporate behavior at the margins, not to address their nature. We've tried to curb corporate excesses to perfect the market. Most efforts against corporations in this century have been against the symptoms of corporate domination, and they have taken place in the dens created by corporations to absorb our time and energy, regulatory administrative agencies, and the corporate press. But these are not the arenas of sovereignty, of citizen authority, of our political freedom. Given the constitutional rights which federal courts have given the corporations, and given our powerful corporate culture, these realms are stack deck proceedings where people, communities, and nature are fundamentally disadvantaged. Here we cannot demand, by what authority has Corporation X acted as an oppressor of the sovereign people? Here we cannot declare a corporation beyond its authority and declare it null and void and dismantle it. We must grapple with the reality that today our law and culture concede sovereignty to these artificial entities called corporations. And we must grapple with the fact that so do most of our own citizen organizations, our organizations created to bring about justice and environmental protection and protect worker rights and human rights. So we endlessly tally corporate acts, we analyze the regulatory agencies, we become expert in every issue under the sun. But we don't study who we the people are and how we got into this mess and how it is our responsibility to free ourselves so that we can define all the corporate bodies that we create, business, government, civic, education. We've been resisting corporate assaults one at a time after the fact and over and over and over again. It's enough. It's time to build a cosmic democracy movement, a movement for political rights and for real self-government. It's time for us to be socially responsible. It's time for us to be accountable. But we are not accountable or responsible when we create these monster robots which run rampant in our communities and which in our name sally forth across the world to wreak havoc upon other places and upon other people's self-governance. We are not being socially responsible or civically accountable when we don't act like self-governing people. We are not being socially responsible or civically accountable when we play in the corporate arenas and obey corporate rules. We are not being socially responsible or civically accountable when we permit our agents and government to bestow our sovereignty upon machines. We're not being socially responsible or civically accountable when we organize our communities and then go to corporate executives and to the hacks who run the corporate front groups and ask them, please, please cause a little less harm, or when we offer them even more rewards for being a little less dominating and oppressing. Sovereign people do not beg of or negotiate with the subordinate entities that we create. Sovereign people, self-governing people, instruct subordinate entities. Self-governing people define all the entities we create. And when a subordinate entity violates the terms of its creation and undermines our ability to govern ourselves and violates the fundamentals of a body politic, we are required to move in responsibly and accountably to cut this cancer out of the body politic. We make all our struggles for justice and democracy here and around the world easier by weakening the ability of corporations to make the rules, to set the culture, and to oppress us. With such deeds, will we honor the millions of people who struggled before us to wrest power from tyrants and to define themselves in the face of terror and oppression. Thank you.
That was Richard Grossman, recorded in Washington, D.C. at the 1996 teach-in organized by the International Forum on Globalization. This is a tribute to his still largely unknown work, which had died on November 22, 2011. He lived with his wife, Mary MacArthur, in a small town in the Catskills in New York State. His lasting legacy is the pamphlet Taking Care of Business, written with contribution by Frank Adams, published in 1993. In that pamphlet, Grossman laid out for the first time the history, subversion, and the taking back of the process of chartering corporations. Grossman wrote, "When we look at the history of our states, we learn that citizens intentionally defined corporations through charters. In exchange for the charter, a corporation was obligated to obey all laws, to serve the common good, and to cause no harm. Early state legislators wrote charter laws to limit corporate authority and to ensure that when a corporation caused harm, they could revoke its charter. Corporations may have taken our political power, but they have not taken our constitutional sovereignty. Citizens are guaranteed sovereign authority over government office holders. Every state still has legal authority to grant and to revoke corporate charters. Corporations, large or small, still must obey all laws, serve the common good, and cause no harm. To exercise our sovereign authority over corporations, we must take back our political authority over our state governments. Our right to charter corporations is as crucial to self-government as our right to vote. Both are basic franchises, essential tools of liberty." End quote from Taking Care of Business by Richard Grossman, a slender pocketbook of 32 pages filled with practical advice, bibliography, and footnotes. The booklet is out of print. A link to the text on Dave Radcliffe's website is on tucradio.org. It is an amazingly timely resource. There are two important projects that Richard Grossman initiated in the last months of his life that do not receive enough notice in the obituaries about his work. Upstate New York, where he lived in a small town, is in the crosshairs of natural gas exploration and hydrofracking. Fracking involves injecting highly toxic chemicals deep underground to fracture rock formations to force out the gas. Fracking has been linked to over 1,000 incidents of groundwater contamination across the U.S., including many cases where people can actually set their tap water on fire. The process is currently unregulated due to exemptions in law. Richard Grossman became active in the Sovereign People's Action Network, SPAN. He presented at the August 2011 Greenfest in New York City the draft of a law to not just regulate or limit the practice, but to formally criminalize the procedure. The draft of this criminalized fracking law is an amendment to the Penal Code and dated August 2011. A link to this draft is posted on the newest programs page of TUC Radio's website. The second legacy of Richard Grossman's work that he formalized as draft just 4 weeks before he died is an act to criminalize chartered incorporated business entities as a class or group. Several obituaries refer to that act by name without offering a link to the text. It seems as if those who want to remember Richard Grossman shy away from presenting his most radical proposal. But Richard himself wanted it to be seen. It is his contribution to the Occupy movement. He sent an email with a draft with permission to share to friends and colleagues just a few weeks before he died. TUC Radio and I received it on October 23, 2011. It said, "Autumnal greetings, Mariah. I sent this around the other week. If you can help spread, I'd much appreciate it." His cover letter said, "At Wall Street and other occupations, there's much talk of greed and corruption. Historical, constitutional, and legal analyses as well as evaluations of past people's strategies and organizings are skimpy. For people prepared to move beyond greed and corruption, see below an act to criminalize chartered incorporated business entities. Why not target USA and state law that has long enabled minority rule, that has constitutionalized violence against peoples and the earth? Could be energizing, keeping in mind, of course, that there is no quick fix, so we'll have to be creative, persistent. Feel free to circulate. The time is ripe. Good luck to us all and to the earth. In solidarity, Richard. That was the cover for Richard Grossman's email that I received 4 weeks before he died. The act to criminalize chartered incorporated business entities is a passionate, learned, and moving provocation, setting July 4th, 2012 as date. It says that on that day, quote, all existing business corporation charters granted by the United States and by all states shall be null and void. And on that same date, owners of stock in previously incorporated business entities and entity directors and executive officers shall forever be liable for all debts, liabilities, assaults, denials, harms, invasions, and usurpations committed by any and all successor business entities, end quote. There's more specific formal legal language that is too difficult to read on air. However, the attached notes form the essence of Richard Grossman's thinking and are his legacy to the movements for self-governance and occupation that began in 2011. That was a tribute to some of Richard Grossman's work. He died of cancer on November 22, 2011. In the last 15 years, he had been an important member of POCLAD, the Project on Corporations, Law and Democracy, and CELDEF, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. For links to the texts mentioned in this program, come to www.tucradio.org. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information on how to order a CD of Richard Grossman on Dismantling Corporations by calling 1-707-463-2654. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654. For information on how to order, you can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.